Will we ever get new developments in energy use, Charles, where we can save some money, not rely on oil, regardless of where it comes from?
Absolutely. We have moved so close to that point that it's amazing. And there are many new developments that I'll talk about, some of which are things that we can do in our own backyard, but some are really big and on the horizon. So, yes, let's get into that subject right away.
All right, let's do that. And, of course, you know, here we are. What are the possibilities today? What do we have on the horizon now? We've got solar, wind. What else is out there?
Well, there actually are real progress steps being taken in the generation of fusion power, and that looks like they're getting ready to do some testing very shortly. They've built some large test reactors, and they're going to be trying to fuse hydrogen. And there's also the possibility of fusing a form of helium known as helium-3. Other countries are actually starting to mine the moon for that very shortly. It's in their plans. And that fuel will be the most common fuel for nuclear fusion reactors soon. Another thing that people are looking at is what's known as random thermal energy. There are ways of taking the random motion of molecules or patterns of particles moving around and extracting a little bit of energy from them. This is not the same as zero-point energy. You know, it's not the same thing at all. But imagine a ratchet. If you strike a ratchet, it only moves in one direction forward, and it won't move in the other direction. Well, using nanotechnology, we can create tiny ratchets that respond to being struck by particles that are moving under random heat and can extract a little bit of energy from them. And if you create sheets of this material in a form like a battery, then you actually can have a cell that charges itself based on random heat. So that's one of the things that's being explored. We've got a lot of really interesting things like this coming up.
Do you ever see the day, Charles, where a home, an individual's home, will be self-contained?
Well, absolutely. We had them a century ago. Why can't we have them now with all the technology we have? You know, you look at how farmers and people in rural settings lived at the beginning of the 1900s, they were all self-sufficient. It was only when we got onto the electricity jag, we have all of our toys that run on electricity, all of our devices, that we ended up hooking to the grid to power everything. Well, there are many mandates that have been put in place so that homes, new construction, particularly in California, have to produce more energy than they consume. So, you know, legislating it doesn't make it happen, but it surely provides the impetus to get it to happen. So we're going to see many, many advancements. The big thing that stood in the way is not how to generate that power, but how to store that power. And new storage technologies are also emerging that will allow us to run a small windmill, some solar panels, or something similar, and save that energy up so it can run all night. That's our biggest problem right now.
What about batteries? Are batteries, and I mean batteries that are used in flashlights, radios, just about anything we use.
Oh, there are billions of batteries created every year and then thrown away when they're expended. Batteries are terribly expensive. In fact, throwaway power cells are one of the most expensive forms of energy there is, and that's why so many battery companies exist. There will be a move to get rid of the batteries soon. The first steps have been taken with fuel cells. They have a fuel cell that consumes a simple mixture of methyl alcohol and water, and it acts just like a hydrogen fuel cell, but you put a little ampoule in it. You've seen the little perfume ampoules you can get at sample containers. You have a little ampoule like that full of methanol, and it goes into the unit, and it runs by consuming that fuel, producing nothing but carbon dioxide and a little water vapor, and it makes the battery for cell phones and laptops and that sort of thing. Now, right now they're terribly expensive because most fuel cells, particularly specialty cells, have a lot of expensive metals like platinum and rhodium and palladium inside the electrodes. But they're coming down.
And how long would that power last?
Generally, a little ampoule of liquid about the size of your little finger can run a laptop for up to a week or more.
Is it rechargeable?
Absolutely. You just drop the ampoule out, put more alcohol in it, you put it in, and you run it some more. So it's almost like a little engine, but it doesn't make any noise and does no movement. Then it uses electronics and chemistry to combust the fuel and make electricity directly, just like the space shuttle's fuel cells do.
If you used it in a radio, but let's say you only ran your radio for an hour or 2 hours, shut it off again. Some batteries, for example, will last. I know Bob Crane at the C Crane, one of our sponsors, they have batteries that last in their radios, some up to 70 hours. How long, what if you were able eventually to put these little capsules in a radio, how long would they run a radio that went on and off sometimes.
Ah, well, if the radio was being turned on and off, you probably could run the thing for a year or more.
Oh, my gosh.
You see, the consumption of power in a radio is typically much, much less than it is for, let's say, a laptop. And if you can get a week of use out of a laptop, you could get many, many weeks out of a radio that you were only running intermittently. So this is a very safe, very compact method of storing power, and it's very, very efficient.
Russians are talking about building a nuclear plant in Syria. We know what's happening in Iran. Is there a better way to generate power today, Sir Charles, than nuclear power plants?
Well, there are different methods, you know, that can give us pretty good density. Nuclear power plants have a pretty high density. That's one of the issues. And they're so easy to fuel. I mean, face it, you know, you can have one vehicle drive enough fuel to a nuclear plant to run it for a year. And the waste produced by them really isn't that great. If you had a 1 billion-watt nuclear plant, the waste from running it for a year would fit in 1 cubic meter. You could put it under a dining room table.
Yeah.
And a lot of people object to the use of nuclear. But, you know, that really only happens over there. In the United States, the use of nuclear power has languished, and now I'm in an area where they're building 2 nuclear reactors right here in South Carolina. You know, for every watt of power that's produced, there is a tariff on it, and there's been a nuclear waste fund that has accumulated over the years of about $33 billion. And this was meant to help dispose of nuclear waste. The interesting thing is, in this country, what they did was they made it illegal to recycle nuclear waste. Now, in other countries, such as France, France is well over 90% nuclear, and they recycle all their waste. And, you know, in fact, if you look at the picture, France, Great Britain, Russia, Germany, Belgium, and Japan, just to name a few, all recycle their nuclear waste. And
now, when you say recycle, what do you mean recycle? What do they do with it?
You literally reprocess it into fuel rods, pull out the dangerous materials, and set them aside to break down. So this is a known technology, and it's been around for decades. It's simply a matter of the law in this country that it's not done. And we wouldn't need to use places like the Yucca Mountain storage. About $10 billion in a number of years has gone into the Yucca Mountain facility.
Yeah.
And suddenly some people have said, well, maybe this isn't the right way to do it. And now they're taking another look at it. So, and I saw one of these TED Talks, you've probably heard of the things, where they have a keynote speaker who's knowledgeable about a certain subject.
Yeah, and they go around the country.
Right. And in one of them, Bill Gates had mentioned that he was going to put some money up to help solve the nuclear waste issue. Well, that amazed me, because this is a man who is in touch, you would think, and would know these issues, and yet we already have solutions to the nuclear waste issues. We had a device known as the Phoenix Reactor that was developed many years ago, and it's interesting. You go online, you don't find anything about it. It's just vanished. But the Phoenix reactor was unique in that it was meant to burn nuclear waste directly. And in fact, we do have reactors that will burn nuclear waste. They'll break it down. Now, overseas, they use breeder reactors in many cases, and they literally make more fuel than they use. And then, of course, recycling is a very important part of the equation. It really comes down to what sort of power do we need, how much do we need, and what are we willing to do to get it. Nuclear can be done safely and cleanly. It can be managed properly. It's just got a really black eye over the last couple of decades, because we've had a couple of disasters where human beings didn't do what the telltales, the machines, and the alarms said, and then we ended up with problems like Chernobyl and Three Mile Island.